This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Phil Dwyer's 2012 Juno Award for the incredibly ambitious album Changing Seasons is the latest in a resume full of examples of his genuinely adventurous creative spirit. Changing Seasons was awarded the Juno for Contemporary Jazz Album of the Year. The Changing Seasons suite marks a new stage in Phil Dwyer's development as an artist, writes New Dadoon at VancouverJazz.com. The theme running through the composition is change, which Phil describes as changing weather, changing climatic conditions, the changing economic structure of the world, and some big changes in my own life. It's a call to acknowledge the fact of all these changes taking place and a query as to what are we going to do about it. Prior to the Juno Awards event, Phil Dwyer spoke to the Ottawa Citizen about his life and his work. He said that from 1983 until 2008, drug and alcohol use constantly threatened his health, family, and career, even if it seemed to casual observers that he was flourishing. He was also diagnosed with bipolar disorder in 2001. Phil told the interviewer, "The years that time have been more than less constant attempt to wrestle this illness to the ground, using different combinations of medication, self-education, and lots of therapy." We're joined in the studio by Phil Dwyer.
Welcome to People First Radio, Phil.
Thank you, Kevin.
There are many bios about you online, and I read a few of them in preparing for this interview, a number of interviews, but your interview with the Ottawa Citizen stands out for its candor about your personal struggles with addiction and mental illness. What led to that candor?
I can't remember what brought me to Ottawa, but I was in Ottawa, and Peter from the Citizen had run an ongoing series of interviews with musicians, and he asked me if I'd be willing to be part of that series. And something inside me, I knew that this was the time when I had to give an interview that actually told everything. I'd given so many interviews that were, you know, essentially turned out to be kind of fluff pieces because I just was telling people what I thought would look good on in the newspaper. And I really felt like after what I'd been through, I sort of intuitively felt that if I could get some of these things out into the public forum, I could let go of them and I wouldn't have to carry them around to the degree that I had been. It had been a fairly lonely process up till that point, and once I got it out there, I really knew I'd made the right decision, and it turned out to be very positive on a number of different levels.
You described March 14th, 2008 as a turning point. What happened on that day?
I'd been, I think late in 2007, early 2008, I'd been making a real effort to try to get clean. I had canceled a tour that I knew was going to be damaging to me to be out of, to be on the road at that point. So I stayed home and tried to get it together. And in February of 2008, I went on a trip to Chile. And about halfway through that tour, I started drinking heavily. I mean, I only drank one way. It was heavily. And when I got home, it was just more of the same. And then later on in March, I was down in Portland working with some friends of mine. And I had to come home. On March 14th, I woke up. I'd been on about a three-day bender. I had to drive 6 or 7 hours home to my family. I felt terrible. I felt terrible about the fact I was going to be going home feeling like that again, and I'd be useless to the kids and my wife for a few days while I tried to recover. And something just snapped. I just, you know, in AA they say never say that you're quitting forever, but I knew that was the day I woke up, and I knew that I was either going to stay sober or I was going to die. And I made the decision that I was just going to, whatever it took, I was going to stay clean.
You said that your efforts since 2008 to stay clean and sober have been supported by everyone you know, in your own words. But the battle is, of course, personal, and it includes mental health challenges. Tell us about that.
Well, that's a, I guess that you could say that's a potential chicken and the egg theory about what led what. I know that the first time I had what was clearly defined as a mental health crisis was during one of the few periods of sobriety that I had in my adult life. And I attributed how great I was feeling to the fact that I was not drinking or using drugs. And I kept on feeling better and better and better until all of a sudden things just collapsed. And I realized what had happened. So I don't know. I know that since I've been sober, dealing with the mental health issue has been not easy, but it's certainly been possible. And before then, it just wasn't possible. There was so many variables in the mix. And I met a very, very gifted therapist here in Nanaimo, and she kind of put her foot down as well around the same time that she just wasn't going to deal with me anymore until she was dealing with a sober person. And all those factors came together, and I can't say it's been easy, but it has been possible, and it was not like that before.
What does recovery look like on a daily basis for you?
Just doing all the things that, all the basic things that I found impossible to do before. I found them so daunting, depending on where I was on the spectrum of my bipolar swings. You know, sometimes just like a simple thing like getting out and watering the garden, or just keeping up with my phone calls, keeping in touch with people, just staying on track with projects. One of the biggest challenges I faced throughout my career was the fact that my perspective was quite often radically different day to day, and it was really, I found it really impossible to follow through on lots of things, because what seemed like a brilliant idea on Monday, by Thursday it just seemed laughable. And so that's my recovery. I think that's been one of the main factors that I've noticed, is the consistency. And nothing else changes. It's only how you're thinking about it. So if you can think about things with a fair degree of consistency, then you're able to act based on that.
This is People First Radio, only on CHLY 101.7 FM and streaming at chly.ca.
Canadian musician Phil Dwyer is recognized as a master of his craft. He's a saxophonist, composer, arranger, pianist, and educator. Phil has appeared on over 100 recordings, including Juno Award-winning releases with top jazz musicians. Phil Dwyer received a 2012 Juno Award for the incredibly ambitious album Changing Seasons, which was named Contemporary Jazz Album of the Year. Prior to the Juno Awards event, Phil Dwyer spoke to the Ottawa Citizen about his life and his work, including his battles with addiction and mental illness. We're joined in the studio by Phil Dwyer.
Phil, we opened our interview with you today by playing a bit of the piece you called Spring from Changing Seasons. And a moment ago, we heard you playing tenor saxophone from the piece called Summer. But you're principally the composer for this very ambitious work, the album itself, which fuses string orchestra with big band. Tell us more about Changing Seasons.
It's one of those things that I just had an idea, and I think one of the big strengths I've had over the years is my connections and friends in the industry that can make things happen. So I knew who to call that could help me make it happen, which was the violinist Mark Feuer. And once we got the ball rolling, I just refused to not keep it rolling until I'd gotten what I wanted, which was a top quality recording of the piece.
I listened to another interview that you did about the writing of this, about the work that went on behind the scenes, and you described scenes in which you had pieces of the score laid out across your entire house.
Basically across the width of the house, yeah, taped end to end, just so that I could walk down the row and get a sense of how it all fit together. When you're dealing with a 40-piece orchestra, it's really hard to get the big picture of how the different parts are actually going to work. You could write 8 bars of brilliant music, but it might not fit with the next 8 bars, and that's no good. So a big perspective was really necessary.
How did the creation of Changing Seasons interact with and reflect your own life experiences at the time?
Well, I think that the main thing was that I was able to be organized enough to pull it off. Up until that point, I'd sort of vacillated back and forth between being hyper organized and wanting to organize things into these minute systems that nobody else could understand except for me, or being completely despondent and completely unorganized. And so over the last few years, I finally taught myself how to be sort of regular organized and just starting work at the same time every day. And like I said, you know, keeping a perspective on it, this was the first time I'd ever written a piece of music without thinking that I sucked most of the time. Actually, when I was working on this, I thought it was good. And I'd never had that before. And so because of that, because of the positive energy I was bringing to it, I was able to put a lot more attention to detail and to really, you know, take it that final extra couple of yards to, I mean, I'm very, very happy and proud of this work.
Mm-hmm. How has your work been affected by your recovery? You're speaking in that direction, but are there any other examples that you want to share with us about the effects of recovery on your current work?
I think people I work with are more inclined. They've gotten used to me being more consistent in my mood and how I deal with things and being. I always tried to be reliable, if reliable means turning up. What kind of shape I was in when I turned up was up for grabs. I usually didn't turn up. I turned up under all sorts of different conditions, but I think that I've gotten a lot of really positive feedback from people I know, so saying how much easier it is. I'm easier to work with. I'm a nicer guy. I'm more regular. So that's all good for me. Mm.
Tell us more about the inspiration for the album Changing Seasons, and tell us a little bit about the Vivaldi aspect of the Four Seasons as well.
Well, I had been on a music festival the summer before I started writing this piece with Mark Feuer and three other violinists, and they each played one movement from the Vivaldi Four Seasons, and I had the score for the Vivaldi Four Seasons, and of course I'd heard it many, many times. It's one of the most well-known pieces of classical music. My only inspiration was, what if we could just take that idea and make it current, make it pertain to, rather than just sort of relating to people's kind of preconceived notions of what winter means or what spring means. And I tried to take in the writing things that might potentially happen. You have to look hard for it, but there was times when the melting in the spring was a lot faster than you might normally think, and so it caused a bit more of a torrent. So there was a few kind of, I don't know if you call them cheesy, kind of programmatic music ideas in there that I had some fun with. But really I thought, if I write this music and people enjoy it and they know what the idea was behind it, if I get one person to put some serious thought into any of these issues that I was talking about, then that was worth it, because it's going to be incremental. Whatever positive change we have is not going to come all at once. It's going to be incremental. So we all need to do what we can, right?
There isn't a lot of your specific playing on this album, but you did do the saxophone solo in Summer. What was the voice of the saxophone saying during that particular solo? If we go back to what you called perhaps a cheesy programmatic element in the whole thing.
What it was saying at that point, that was the last thing that we did on the record. And I had worked so hard, and I'd always planned that I was going to play one solo on the record. And when it got to the end, what was going through my mind was, I don't even know if I remember how to play the saxophone anymore. So I was just trying to, I really wanted to do something that wasn't show-offy, that really fit the context of the music, and just try to make it nice. And I did two or three takes and ended up being pretty good.
Phil Dwyer, is there anything else that you'd like to add to our conversation today?
I can't think of anything. I'm really, really pleased to have the opportunity to come on the show, Kevin, and congratulations on all the great stuff you're doing here. And I'm just happy to be in a position that I can take some of my stories public, and I don't have to worry about the fallout so much as maybe some other people do. So it's a little bit easier for me, and I'm glad I have that opportunity to contribute any way that I can.
Thanks for coming in and joining us, and I look forward to hearing more about what you're currently working on and what's about to come out in the next short while.
Well, maybe I'll come back.
Okay.
Okay.
Very good.
Okay.
Phil Dwyer is a multi-Juno award-winning jazz musician and composer living on Vancouver Island. His album, Changing Seasons, was awarded the 2012 Juno for Contemporary Jazz Album of the Year. You can find Phil Dwyer online at phildwyer.com.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.